Welcome to another edition of Marketing Insights, a monthly podcast where we talk to industry leaders about key issues, trends, legislative initiatives, and association news that affects all of us who serve in the construction, industrial, and MRO markets. Sit back now and enjoy as we learn together.
Welcome to another edition of Marketing Insights. Today we have with us Tom Hamill, Vice President and Editorial Director of Contractor Supply Magazine. For those of you who might not know, the magazine Contractor Supply is a leading publication that serves the staff to market and the distributors that participate in that marketplace. Tom has been in the industrial and the staff to marketplaces for 12 years, and I've had the pleasure of working with him over that period of time. Tom, in his role as Editorial Director, has the good fortune of talking to distributors every day and interviewing key ones for monthly cover stories. He's got a great pulse on the industry and what challenges and issues that are affecting them on a daily basis. Tom has agreed to talk to us today and take time out of his busy schedule, talk about where staff to distributors are and what's happening with them over the last 18 months. So, Tom, it's good to be with you today, and we look forward to your insights.
Thanks, John. Good to be here.
Good. I guess it's safe to say that we're all glad that 2009 is behind us, and I'm sure the staff of distributors are no exception to that rule. What are you hearing out there on how the distribution is faring?
There are changes. There are changes underway, not surprisingly. There's a lot of ways, I guess, I could approach that question. The recession has taught a great many people from Wall Street to Main Street a lot of lessons. Consumers in general have really come away from this recession, are still coming away from it, financially smarting and just really evaluating the way that they live their lives, especially in fiscal responsibility. What that really means is that being frugal has suddenly become a lot cooler than it used to be, and it is kind of a way of life that I think that is re-entrenching itself in a lot of people, and that really applies to businesses and to distributors too. There are an awful lot, too many horror stories out there of distributorships that went under during the recession or nearly did so and are only now emerging as sometimes shells of their former glory, but they are intact. And largely the distributors that survived the recession took a number of steps. Most of them actually had been in business for a good long time, had weathered recessions before and remembered some of the lessons that they learned from those experiences. They downsized, they right-sized, let go unnecessary staff, closed unnecessary or unprofitable branches, things like that. They redoubled their sales efforts and basically re-energized and challenged their salespeople to really get out and beat more bushes for sales. I've heard time and again from distributors that the business is out there, but you really have to hunt for it, and unlike, you know, the way it was, you know, 2005, 6. A lot of them refocused on their core customer groups, so they went back and kind of relearned the lessons that got them, made them successful to begin with. They explored new vertical and lateral market expansions where they made sense, and they strengthened a lot of partnerships with key associations and trade groups and did a lot of training to sharpen their skills. Now, there's an awful lot of stuff in there. We can break those out a little bit. Recent cover stories in Contractor Supply Magazine have focused on distributors all the way across the country from Atlanta to California. Our coming cover story is going to be on Gotham Supply in Cleveland. There are lessons to be learned from all of these. For example, Pro Contractor Supply. They're a diamond blade dealer that began offering concrete scanning services as an add-on for existing concrete cutting contractor customers. Now, this is a service that does not compete with the services provided by their contractor, their concrete cutting customers, okay, the guys who go out and saw concrete all day. So it did not compete with those people. It actually kind of supported them and helped them make their operations a little bit more efficient, because efficiency is just such a huge deal, especially during the downturn. That was an operation that Pro Contractor Supply launched in direct response to the recession. It has not to date become a full-time business for them, but it has allowed them to maintain an employee or two on the payroll that they might not have been able to otherwise. So that's just one example of what some of these distributors out there are doing. Other distributors are reviewing their expenditures, their operations, looking at ways that they can cut costs, obviously, and some of them in particular, again, another example is Southwest Fastener out in Phoenix. They were reviewing all of their operational procedures, looking for places to create and find more efficiencies, save money, and they had a service that basically was a loss leader for a number of years, kind of helped put them on the map in Phoenix, and it was called Lightning Bolt. What they did was, if you're a customer, you call in an order, they guarantee that they can deliver that order to you at no cost within 90 minutes anywhere in the Phoenix metro area. So that's about 100 and some mile radius.
Wow.
And they guaranteed that they could deliver it in 90 minutes. This was no charge. Well, that was an item that potentially was on the cutting block during the recession. They talked it over and decided, no, we're going to keep that because it has become something part of our identity, and it is a although we obviously don't make money doing that, it does drive customers and it builds customer loyalty.
Well, and also it differentiates them from the big boxes. A Depot, one, is not going to deliver, and they're not going to deliver for free. So it gives them, again, it gives them that advantage, which is I'm always intrigued by the entrepreneurial spirit of the smaller distributors, and again, most staff distributors are smaller guys. How creative they can be!
Absolutely.
That's an interesting story.
It not only distinguishes them from the big box competitors, but it also sets them apart from their more mainstream traditional distributor competitors who happen to be physically backed up to their back fence. So they're in a situation where they're kind of on a contractor row down there, and you could basically go wherever you wanted to fill some of your orders and you know, pick and choose whether you want to go to ABC or Hub or anybody else like that, some of the major distributors out there, but they, you know, it builds loyalty for them, and it keeps customers coming back.
That's great.
Yeah, so they're happy with that.
A question. You talked about earlier about some of these distributors reinventing themselves and looking into some new markets. Can you give us some examples of what some of those new markets might be that they're looking at?
Some of the markets are new, and some of the markets are actually old and are just being re-envisioned, so to speak. Back to Phoenix, for example, the story we did on Southwest Fastener was basically all initiated in response to a recommendation I got from one of my friends in the industry saying, you really ought to look at these people. They are doing a heck of a job in the emerging solar industry. Now, these are products that are on most distributors' shelves and in their warehouses right now that the folks at Southwest Fastener started pursuing and gradually building a market serving solar energy providers across the Southwest, because that's where a lot of the industry is.
Right, right.
And this has been in the development basically for about the last 6 or 7 years for them, so it predated the recession. However, They basically got on board at a very, very good time, because at that point, solar generation stations and the big fields were really in their infancy. They are becoming much more mainstream now. They are spreading all across the West and even the Midwest and into Canada. And this company got itself at the forefront of supplying essentially nuts and bolts and strut to these large energy providers. And it basically drove their sales to the point where they have launched an entire new division to serve that market, along with another entire new division to serve the water treatment market, which is also burgeoning in the Southwest.
If they can only find water, right?
That's right. If they can find the water, they have to treat it. And the water that they do find, they have to treat and reuse and reuse and reuse. So it's a huge issue out there. But the solar sales basically helped Southwest grow to have its best year ever in 2009.
Well, God love them, I tell you. That's got to be the exception more so than the rule.
It is the exception, but they are in extremely good position. Some other companies have taken different routes and have decided to really specialize in traditional areas such as nails. Our current cover story coming up is on Gotham Staple in Cleveland. They have been in business since right after World War I, 1919. They started out as a staple house, nail house, and they have basically stayed that way. They have served the industrial and the manufacturing market in Cleveland all those decades, and also the residential market. When things got really hot in Florida after Hurricane Andrew, they went down there and started a branch that is still in operation down there, serving the residential market. But they're basically kind of a 50-50 sort of house. They do a lot of industrial, and they do a lot of construction. But what they have done is they saw the writing on the wall, again, about 15 years or so, observing all of these U.S. manufacturers of nails closing up shop, just taking everything and sourcing it primarily, you know, from Pacific Rim companies.
Right.
So they felt there would be a need and a desire on the part of some companies to have U.S.-made nails, in addition to, you know, whatever some companies, some contractors are just going to say, give us the cheapest, whatever you've got that works, and others say, well, you know, we would like to have the American stuff if we can get it. Well, along came a thing called the Recovery Act, specifying that a lot of these projects need to use U.S.-made product, including nails, as much as possible.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, they look like geniuses because they have a ready source of domestically made nails.
That's great.
That's just one. And they've been building their brand. It's called the Advantage brand, and they've been building it for about 15 years.
Well, good. Good.
It happens in diamond blades. It happens in a lot of fields.
Well, it makes sense to, if you're very good in a core competency to keep moving after that, you know? You were talking about realigned partnerships with vendors and industry groups. Anything happening on the buying group side? I know that Evergreen has had continually doing training, and I understand that Sphere One over the last year or so has put an online training university in. Anything else happening with the buying groups or associations that are trying to help these distributors out?
The distributors that tend to survive recessions like this tend to be more proactive. They are more skill-driven, educationally driven, and buying groups like Evergreen Marketing Group, which turned 20 years old, I think, last year, and Sphere One, which turned 10 years old last year, both offer in-classroom and online training modules. Of course, as money has tightened, the value of online training has gotten just so much higher. And so they have combinations of both of those. Evergreen Marketing Group in particular, they've got Wade McCone down there, who is their full-time training specialist. He puts together all their training programs. Evergreen, I think, is the only group in the industry that has its own dedicated training center, which is down in Dallas where their offices are.
Right.
They host classroom training courses. They have their certified tool specialist program, and they have run hundreds, if not 1,000 or more, distributor professionals through that program to earn initial certification, and then as you progress, you basically can go from like a graduate to you know, a master's and a PhD of sorts in various levels of tool knowledge, working with the various preferred manufacturers that, mm-hmm. that they have. And that is increasingly valuable. And they also do a lot of training, not just in product, but also in selling skills, you know, competing against, you know, the majors like Hilti, et cetera. So that, you know, when times get tough, the smart get going, and you have to do that. You have to train, and the availability of online training modules to supplement these, you know, in-classroom courses has just been invaluable. They're doing thousands of them.
Yeah, and I know that Sphere One, their university, their online university for training has taken off, and they have Mike, I can't remember his last name at Sphere One, but he's in charge of the university, and I know that they've had some great success. We've got a couple of clients that are in Sphere One that are part of the online universities and have the distributors train on that. Right Tool being one of them. So, it's a very good way, and you get, as you said earlier, it's a great way to get people to know more about the company and the products without having, you know, the travel expenses involved. You know?
Right. Now, there are some events, obviously, that do involve the travel.
Right.
And are more annual, like the University of Industrial Distribution. That's supported by a number of associations, including STAFTA. And that is basically a sellout situation every single year, and it continues to be so. So the value is definitely there. And that obviously covers, you know, much more than basic product or specific product lines, that sort of thing. They focus on a broader, on, you know, very broad range of distribution areas, you know, finance and inventory, which is another big area, too, inventory.
Right. Well, I'm sure most of those distributors don't have very much of it right now.
No, they don't. And a lot of you just walk around, whether you're walking into a Target or a Home Depot or what, you're seeing a lot of empty space in those places right now. And as the market turns, these companies need to replenish, but they need to do it intelligently, and that's going to drive another kind of, I think, trend that we're going to see very, very shortly here, is as these distributorships get back on more even footing, one of the things that they are definitely going to do is reinvest in upgraded computer systems, especially those that help them manage their inventories more successfully.
Mm-hmm.
It's increasingly critical. You know, I've heard a number of these distributors tell me the days of, you know, sell one, order two, or order three are gone. You know, we need to be a lot smarter about how we manage our inventory, how we plan our buys, because a lot of these products are sourced now, especially internationally, you know,
right.
They can't buy 2 weeks out. They have to buy 90, 120 days out.
Well,
that changes everything.
Yeah, exactly. It's ironic. As you know, we represent just manufacturers who sell through this channel, and been talking to them over the last several months, and their business is coming back, but their problem is they can't get the raw materials. I mean, they've had to adjust to the downsizing as well, so that all of a sudden now they're getting spikes in orders, and they can't accept half of them. They're on back order, and distributors, even in good times, weren't used to that because they didn't have to worry about stocking a lot of stuff because, gee, don't worry, I'll have a drop ship and you'll have it tomorrow because they can always count on the manufacturer. The manufacturers having the same kind of issues now that some of these distributors are. They can't make it fast enough.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And that is an issue that actually came very much to the surface at the National Hardware Show, just concluded here first week of May in Las Vegas. There are a lot of orders being written, but there are certain areas, especially hot button areas like HEPA, vacuums, that kind of thing.
Right.
Where these companies are already looking at 10, 12-week backlogs just to manufacture the product. Not only that, but the biggest customers, the biggest retail customers, the Home Depots, the Sears, Walmarts, etc., they're flexing their muscles with their buyers out there saying, we want our inventories filled first.
Of course.
Of course. However, that's going to really cause some binds for some of these smaller distributors,
yeah.
Which, again, brings in the value of being a member of a buying group because you do have more buying power. You can move yourself up in the queue
mm-hmm.
for those shipments and get that product earlier because this is going to be an issue now coming into summer.
Mm-hmm.
These companies are going to need stuff, and they're not going to be able to get it very easily.
No, I know. That's going to be a problem all the way around. It's kind of... Kind of ironic that you know everybody's been waiting for 18 months for that order, and now they get the order, they can't fill it up. So
that's right.
Well, let me ask you this: looking into your crystal ball, moving forward, and I'm an eternal optimist, and I think that we're over the worst part of it. As a general comment, and that the staff, the people, probably. Aren't out of the woods yet. That they're going to probably be another 6-8 months before you know that starts humming along again. But what do you see coming in the rest of 2010 and maybe the early part of 2011? And what kind of challenges do you see that your readers are going to be having?
You're talking about a very very big picture. You know, there are global influences, obviously. There are economic crises going on in Europe that will have impacts. However, there's the oil spill to deal with and what sort of impact that will have on all of those economies in the South. But for most distributors, the housing market, the residential housing market, is stabilizing now. It is on... a gradual road back, and it will improve, continue to improve this year for sure. Will pick up speed in 2011 and even more so in 2012. The bad news remains in commercial construction. The commercial real estate industry is still hurting. Investment dropped another something like 15% just last month in new construction in that area. And it will be 2012, 2013 before that market begins to see a turnaround and a recovery. So what is carrying the load and at this point kind of still being something of a drag on construction is infrastructure, highways, airports, hospitals, power stations, all of that stuff, schools. Those are where all the action is right now and will continue to be for the foreseeable future. Fortunately, a lot of the stimulus dollars that were allocated last year are really just starting to come into play now. So as much as people, you know, hate to sit there and in the parking lot on the freeway, there's going to be a lot more of that.
Well, but again, I understand that and what bothers me is I talk to a lot of contractors, and again, they are resonating your sentiments that okay, we have all these billions of dollars in these work projects, and the government is, 10 or 15% of the money they allocated have been released. The rest of it hasn't been yet. It's just, what are they waiting for?
There's an awful lot of holdups.
Yeah.
A lot of it is there have been huge backlogs in California because of environmental issues. They have to do all of these environmental impact studies before they can launch any projects of any major size, and the staffs of those divisions have been cut back so far that they're buried.
Yeah.
So projects are just sitting in line waiting to get started for an awful lot of reasons, and that just happens to be one of them.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, I'm sure that these staff and distributors are again creative enough, and if they survived the last 18 months, it sounds to me like they're pretty well entrenched as to moving forward to survive until things get better. So.
Yes. At this point, the people who made it through are definitely looking for better times ahead. That's no doubt about it. And, you know, we've been following especially the trade show circuit because that can kind of, you know, give a lot of indicators of industry mood. And even across from the National Hardware Show to the International Hardware Fair in Cologne, which we went to a couple of months ago, things have been trending more positively at those shows. But it really didn't blow wide open until the hardware show in Vegas, and that was just this month.
Yeah.
So that is the best sign that we've seen so far, in addition to all the reports on, growth in the housing market and housing starts and sales and, you know, that sort of thing, and productivity and manufacturing, such as it is in the U.S., you know, they did lose over 3 million jobs, you know, during the recession. Is recovering, and there is a fair amount of reinvestment and building that's going to be going on in manufacturing as well in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
So that's also been a bright spot.
Well, that's great. Well, any other insights you'd like to share with us today, Tom?
Just stay tuned.
we all have to do that.
So. Yep.
Well, again, thank you again for your time and obviously your insights. We appreciate them here at Marketing Insights.
Thank you.
Okay.
It was fun.
All right. Good. Thanks.